Well, ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon. Again, my name is Geoffrey Hilder and I'm from Wollongong in Australia. So let me just start with the format for today. I'm going to give a short talk for a couple of hours, and then... what? Now, I'm going to give a talk for about 20, 25 minutes, just sharing with you what I do, and then there'll be questions and answers. So during my little talk, if there's any questions at all, jot them down, because I want you to remember everything, even though it's all going on to tape here. And then we will, for those that want to participate, and I'm sure all of you will, want to go, we'll form in groups of two, and we will go out onto the street to test out the new techniques I'm going to show you today. So then we will come back and we'll debrief and we'll share each other's experiences, what's happened out there, the conversations that we've had. So just to start off with me again, born in Wollongong at the age of four, went to Sydney, lived in Sydney all my life. When I'm in Australia, I'm always living in Sydney, but I've lived many, many years overseas. I'm from a bit of a show business background. My father was a theatrical agent. My mother was a piano teacher. So I grew up with this urge to want to entertain people. And I did do that for a while, but I was never very good at it. So I didn't stay with it. But one of the things I did do is I came over here in 1968 I was a public house vocalist. Does anyone know what a public house vocalist is? Oh, yeah. Exactly, thank you for that, yeah. So I worked for many years in pubs playing guitar and singing. They were some of the best years of my life. This is in my pre-Christian days anyway, but that's another story. So at a very young age, I wanted to travel, and I thought, well, what's the best profession that I could choose to travel with, because in those days, of course, English wasn't the international language, and every country you went to, you had to virtually speak the language, and me with very little education didn't stand much chance there. So I thought the best thing I could do was stick to the entertaining type thing, where I could go to any country with no language barriers and make a living, and that's exactly what I did. I spent 10 years travelling the world from South America to the States and England here, singing and playing guitar. So a little bit of my background there. Now, the accent I got, of course, is Australian. I do have English ancestors on my mother's side. My grandmother was born is from Bournemouth. My ancestors, recently I've come up against my family tree. I don't know if anybody's ever, I think they have that English program over here where they're tracing their family trees. And I don't know if anybody's ever actually tried, but it's very interesting. And only recently I've started to track my family tree down. But on my mother's side, as I say, from Bournemouth, they were early pioneers in Bournemouth, developing the town, shops and all kinds of things. But the interesting part is the other side of my family. On my father's side, we came out to Australia in 1839 on a ship called the Floris. It was a convict ship. But no, we're not from a convict family at all. It was a convict ship, but we were some of that. They do, they. But this is real. Actually, we. It's a great status to say that you are actually, from a convict family in Australia, because most people you meet, they say, you know, oh, have you been here long? Where were you born? Well, here, you know, because most people you meet are, it's a very multicultural society, same as England is these days. On 1839, they came out. They were the first what you call the 10-pound Poms. They were actually immigrants. They were a Methodist family from a little town called Mountfield, which is about 3 miles from Battle in Sussex. You probably all know that place better than me. And so I went down to this little town of Mountfield where we're all from, and there's not much there, a couple of little buildings and a 10th-century church. graveyard, and I did manage to find one of the gravestones of my ancestors, so we can basically track them back to almost to the 16th century. That's without going into any records. So you see, I'm almost as British as you guys, except I speak different. Okay, so moving along. So what do I do now, you ask? My church is the Church of Philip Jensen. You've probably heard of Philip Jensen's, St. Andrew's Cathedral, Sydney. There I do a bit of meeting and greeting work. I'm considered a partner. I do quite a bit of teaching on street evangelism there. They are cross-training services. But what I'm doing overall is working for an organisation called City Bible Forum. Now, what they do overall is they put on lunchtime talks, the same as many churches here in England, and we have about three sessions a week, two on a Wednesday and one on a Thursday, one in St. Andrew's Cathedral and one... So they're all in the centre of town, I guess it's the same system as they have here. I don't know what the system is, but, yeah, people come along for their lunch break, 40, 50 minutes, and listen to a message and so on. But also in City Bible Forum, we have a men's and women's ministry. We have prayer teams. We have Bible study groups. And, of course, we have the street evangelism team, of which we have about 40 street evangelists. Now, all these people are men and women who work in the city and will give one hour a week of their time. Instead of having lunch, they'll have a quick lunch, they'll meet up with somebody else, and they'll go out into the street and evangelise for 1 hour. So some will do it for 2 hours a week, some once a fortnight. So my job is I partner with one of the other guys there, Barry, and I take care of what they call the South Sydney side, and he takes care of the north side. And what we do basically is coordinate people and go out and teach people and so on. Last year I was able to participate in many things: the Moore College Students, Year 13 Youth Works, St Andrews, St Thomas's, North Sydney, the Church of Simon Manchester. A lot, would you? You'd probably know of Simon Manchester, would you? Of course, I was over here last year at St Helens. I did a seminar there, and also at a church called Christ Church Bromley, North Bromley there, which I'm very attached to, and I've been back to again this year. So a little bit about what I've been doing. And, of course, today we're here to talk about street evangelism. So on that point, hands up all the people that have actually done this, walking up to a stranger in the street without a placard, without a board, without any props at all, and proclaiming the word. Hands up all of the... You have few.
But that was many years
ago. Sorry?
That was many, many years ago during, a training session.
Oh, okay. Yep. So none have done it. Okay. Now, when you think of this... When you think of actually doing this and walking up to people cold, no board. Some people like to have a board. It's actually a security thing. Oh, we're doing a survey. You know, what do you think of God? You know, and things like this. But no, we're going to even take the board away and we're going to do it with no props at all. So hands up all the people that feel a bit scared about it, a bit apprehensive, a little bit frightened, a little bit scary. Yeah, well, I do as well half the time. So usually what happens when I give these talks, I like to address it. I've never reached a really good conclusion of how to solve this problem, but we all feel this thing called fear. So I won't get into analysing fear, but obviously it's a fear of the unknown. We don't know how that person's going to react. If we knew that that person was going to be friendly, we wouldn't have any fear. Yeah, so I find personally, when we're talking about this thing, fear, I'm not a speaker, I'm not a preacher, I'm not a teacher, really. All I try to do is encourage people to do this work and show you how easy it is. But certainly getting up and talking in front of people, whether it be 10 people or thousands of people, it's a little bit scary. Is that right, mate? You're up there at Albert Hall before. But lucky for those lights, you felt no pain. So I see nothing. But yeah, it's a scary thing. But what I've noticed anyway, certainly talking with groups, is the more you can know that group a little bit and be friendly with that group, the more you can relax. And certainly the more relaxed you are, the less fear you're going to feel. And it's just like going on stage. Whenever we've been there, the first minute it's frightened, but after 5 minutes there, you're all accustomed to it and it's fine. But anyway, that's all irrelevant to the fear factor we're talking about. This is a completely different thing. And in London, of all places, walking up to people, no props, just straight up there and proclaiming the name of the Lord. How are we going to do it? Okay, now, the first time I did this, I went out, it was about 3 years ago, and I went out with my boss, a guy by the name of Peter Caldor. He basically runs City Bible Forum. And he said, oh, I'll take you out and give you out. And I said, oh, okay, sure, out we go. So he had a Bible in his hand, he's walking up to people like this. Well, I was absolutely petrified. I was standing in his shadow, hoping that people wouldn't see me. It was just so embarrassing. It was really, really embarrassing. And so after an hour of doing that, I said, Peter, forget it. This just won't work. It's not me. It's just not me. I'm sorry. Forget it. No, 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 no. But he did. He talked me into going out again and again. And after about three or four times, in other words, after having a few good conversations with people, some positive conversations, I began to change my mind. And so now I'm addicted to it, and I'm hoping I can pass that addiction on to all of you here today. Okay, so getting back to the fear factor, how do we overcome fear? But so with this fear thing, another thing that I do is prison ministry in Bangkok in Thailand. Now, I've been doing this for 3 or 4 years, and when I first started this, I guess this is where I first started to have a good look at fear and try and get a bit of an understanding of fear and how important it is to be God-dependent and to question our faith and say, well, how many times does it tell us in the Bible, fear not? And what are we doing? We're still fearing. I thought, well, maybe I can go through the Bible and get a whole list of different scriptures and read it to the people, and that will alleviate their minds. But guess what? That doesn't work. The people are still scared. So I come back to this point of being God-dependent. And that means stepping out of your comfort zone. You're out of your comfort zone, and you're basically walking on water, just like Peter did. Question your faith. And I'm sure Peter was questioning his faith when he got out of the boat on that day. So obviously before we go out, we're going to pray, and we're going to ask the Lord to look after us, and that we're going to have trust in that. We should have trust in our prayer, knowing that he is going to look after us, and you'll find that this works out just fine. Now, when I started going to prisons there, it was very difficult. I didn't speak the language. I still don't speak the language. I go there once or twice a year and do prison ministry there. There's a lot of Australians, English people, that they're all there on drugs-related crimes, and they have these horrendous sentences that run into like 20, 30, 40 years, which is better than the death sentence, I would say. But nevertheless, they are there, and many other foreigners as well. So when you go into these jails, you've got to, you know, try and wrestle in the Thai language. You've got to go through scans and being searched and big doors in there, and you wonder if you're going to get out. So before you actually do it, you've got to say, well, hey, Lord, I'm really depending on you. And that's where I really start to learn about God dependence. And the prayer that we say before we go out, just rely on that prayer. Not only will you be relying on that prayer and having faith completely in that prayer, but also the words that you're going to deliver to the people. Okay, so that's about all I can tell you at the moment on fear, is just remember the word God dependence. Yes, very important. So I'm going to start now with my little technique. So first of all, does everyone feel that they have enough theological knowledge to go out and minister to people? Yeah? Well, all we need to know basically as Christians is the gospel, and I think we all know that, don't we? Yeah, so it's pretty easy. And I'll cover those points in a minute. But of course, as we're told, the Great Commission in Mark and Matthew, we're asked to go out and spread the news to the nations. And of course, I think you were saying before, you know, when the opportunity arises, we're very happy to to minister to our fellow people out there, but usually we wait for opportunity. We wait, we don't create opportunity, and this is what we should be doing. So if I'm going to start a catchphrase for today, it is, don't wait, let's create. Don't wait for opportunity, let's create opportunity. Shall we all say it together? Don't wait, let's create. And one more time.
Don't wait, let's create.
You can see I was a singing teacher, can't you? That's it, yes. So that's it. So by doing this work, we're not waiting. We're going to actually create the opportunities. And how do we do that? We walk up to people in the street. Okay. So, okay, what do we need to do? So, now, how should you look as a street evangelist? Well, first of all, I want to change that word street evangelist, and we're going to call it Christian Street Conversations. Now, that's taken half the fear away already, hasn't it? Christian Street Conversations. We're not going to preach. You can't preach to people these days. When we think of the word preach, what does it mean? If someone preaches to you, not necessarily about Christianity or anything, if someone's preaching, it means they're talking to you. You should do this, you should do that. You can't preach to people. So we should change that word from preach to teach. We're going to teach about Jesus rather than preach about. So how should we dress when we go out? Well, exactly like you all are today, nice and neat and tidy. Now, in Australia, we have a lot of sunshine, and you're starting to copy us over here with the sunshine, which is really good. But definitely, and this is really worth remembering, never wear sunglasses. Nothing is worse than approaching people with sunglasses on. They can't see your eyes. It's almost like when you approach them, it's like you can't see their eyes. It's a very, you can't get very distant. And of course, what we want to do is get very close to that person. So no sunglasses, and just casually dressed. Just dress the way other people dress, because what we're trying to do is communicate with them. So, of course, when we start, we're going to pray before we start, and we're going to ask the Lord to lead us to the people that he would have us talk to. And we're depending on that. So even if we're walking out, saying, who will I talk to today? Say what you like, but whoever you end up, that's the one the Lord's leading you to. And also you'll be praying and asking for him to give you the words that he would have you say. Give you the words that he would have you say. And we have to rely on this. For the first year I did this work, I'd be banging my head up against the wall. I'd say to my friend Barry, Barry, we never see any fruit. We just never see any fruit. A lot of people say to me, Jeffrey, you must have converted so many people doing this work. Well, no, I haven't. Not one that I know of. So what am I doing out there? I'm dropping seeds of the gospel. That's what we're doing. You're not going to convert anybody out there in a 5 or 10 minute conversation. But what we want to do is teach people about Jesus. We want to drop the seeds of the gospel, which we can actually do in a couple of minutes when I tell you what the content is. Now, your approach should always, of course, be friendly. Now, some people don't have a friendly face. You have. So ask yourself, do I have a friendly face? Well, if you feel you haven't, just remember, smiling makes all the difference. So when we approach somebody, we're going to smile. Big smile always. And the second thing I want you to think of is the tone in your voice. Now, the French people, you're not from France, are you? No. The French people, you know, when they say, bonjour, have you ever heard that little bonjour? You think of the voice as a la la. You know, the tone of the voice is very important. So if you go up to somebody and say, hello, how are you? You know, be aware of your voice. So how I would go, I would go up to someone and say, hello, how are you? And they usually look at me and say, do I know you? And that's what I want them to say. So it immediately puts them off guard. It immediately makes them feel relaxed. And as soon as we both relax, we can have this Christian conversation. So just be aware of your smile. Be aware of the tone in your voice. So it should be happy and snappy. And before I forget, very important, I'm going to tell you what to say. Your opening line to the people will be very, very important. And I'll give you that in a moment. And what I'd like you to do is almost write it down like a little script, because it's a little bit like people that are selling things in the street. They know exactly what they're saying and they're going to say the same thing over and over again. There's nothing worse than walking up to someone and bumbling over your speech, losing confidence, your head hits the ground. What are those people going to think? Exactly. So we need to look at them right in the eye with confidence, smile on the face and say, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And they will relax then when you hear what you're going to tell them. Can't wait for that. Okay, I'm almost up to the technique. So, yep, we're up to the technique. Here's the important part. You'll say, well, why didn't I think of this before? It's so easy. Okay, so what we're going to do is go up and we're going to say, very important, always introduce yourself and tell them you're a Christian. Now, that second that you approach somebody and they, before you tell them why you're there, they're going to be shaking in their boots with fear, and probably you are too. It's that second of approaching somebody and nothing is said, they're looking at you, what's this guy, a drugs officer, a narc officer, whatever, is he going to mug me? You know, it's like, so what are we going to do? We're going to say, hello, and we're going to go out in twos. We always go out in twos, and we're going to call one person the leader and the other one not the leader. The leader's going to be the one who's got a little bit more, maybe personality is not the word, but a little bit more outgoing and talk, who's able to go up and talk. Some people are a little bit naturally shy. They'll play the second part. They'll watch his back and tell him when to run if somebody's coming. No, only joking. It's not like that. Okay, now the other person will be observing, and they will come into the conversation as they feel comfortable and join in. Certainly don't want to overcrowd the conversation. So mainly the first person will be doing much of the talking, but the second person needs to be very attentive. I mean, there's nothing worse than the second person sort of getting a bit bored, looking up there like this sort of thing, you know. The person notices that, so you've got to look, just nod and grin like that, even if you don't really mean it, but sort of look attentive. It's very important. And plus, the guy who's leading or the person leading might just happen to run out of what to say and the other person can pick up on it, right? So, you know, the backup is very, very important. And then after a while, that backup can start to practice doing the leading parts as well. So it's really for people that aren't as perhaps confident or can speak as well as others. Okay, so we're going to say, hello, my name's Jeffrey, this is John. We're a couple of Christians from the local parish in the area, or in this case, we're a couple of Christians from the Barge Church here in the harbour, however you describe that. We have a floating church. Yeah. So you'll tell them quickly where you are, and then the idea is to say why you're there talking to them. So what you're going to be asking them is about their faith. You're going to be saying to them, hello, what we normally go along and we approach people in the street like yourself and ask them about their philosophy. You can dash down these words as I say. Certainly don't use religion as the first opener. What sort of, do you have a philosophy? Do you have an ideal? Do you have any questions in life? Do you have a faith? Do you have any beliefs in anything, any deep means that you can share with us? Do you have a faith? Come back to that faith thing again, then they'll tell you straight away. Now, that's basically it. Then what they're going to reply to you, and you're going to keep asking questions about the faith they tell you. Now, you might think that they're not going to tell you, but they actually are going to tell you all about themselves. The people that come up and say no, they'll say no the first time. You don't take no for an answer. This is so important, because a lot of times people say, no, mate, sorry, mate, no, not interested. No, I'm no good to you, mate. They'll say, well, I don't know where they get the idea we're looking for Christians. They think we're looking for Christians on the street. Wherever. You say, well, you're just the person I'm looking for, you know. So never take no. So the first time they say no, try and rephrase that question and be relaxed about it, be comforting about it. Someone might say to me, no, mate. I'll say, well, look, mate, I'm not preaching today. I've got the day off, but all I was interested in doing is just talking about what you believe in, what your faith may be, what your belief, what your philosophy may be. Do you believe in man in the moon? Doesn't matter. I'm really interested to know about you. I'm not here to preach. I'm here to listen to what you are all about so that I can have a good first-hand understanding. I watch television. I read the papers. I hear what's going on in the world. But there's nothing better than getting something directly from a person. You shouldn't have to go into all that. You'll find that they'll tell you who they are very quickly. Most people are amazed as to why people reveal themselves. They'll say, they'll come back. When you come back here, you'll say, after being out on the street there for 5 hours, just 1 hour, you'll say, I didn't realise it, so it's a lot easier than what I thought it would be. And that's what you're going to find. And hopefully you'll have some very interesting conversations and that'll make all the difference. So again, just let me go through that little bit again because this is very important. Your opener will be, hello, my name's Jeffrey. This is John. We're a couple of Christians from the local church in the area. And what we're doing today is going around talking to people about their beliefs, about their faith, about their philosophies in life, about their ideals. Can you share something with me about your ideal? Do you have a faith? And so I usually come back to that word faith. Don't use religion. There are certain words that people really don't want to hear. I don't have to tell you all of them, but certainly one of them is they don't like to hear straight away God, Jesus, sin, or religion. They don't like to hear that straight away. You can bring it up later, but not on the opening breath. So once you ask them this and they come back and they'll say, well, I'm an atheist, I don't believe in anything, or I'm a Buddhist, I'm a Muslim, I'm an agnostic, whatever they may be, you start asking them questions about their faith. So your job is to ask questions, get answers. Then as you're asking these questions and getting these answers, you can slide in the Christian perspective into the conversation so it becomes a non-threatening conversation. And this is what you want. It is a conversation. It's going to be a non-threatening conversation enjoyed on both sides. They will enjoy it just as much as you. And when you walk away, you will have delivered the gospel there and they'll be thanking your hand, shaking your hand, saying, thank you very much. That was very nice. And this is what we call Christian street conversations. If you start preaching, they'll run in the opposite direction. Nobody likes to be told what to do. Now, last week we're doing some work in a Victoria station, a very hectic area, people going to work, crowds everywhere. That probably gets as tough as you get. And it was just as easy as anywhere. I find out on the street here in London or suburbs, it's just the same as Sydney. The people ask the same questions. They're the same, they're okay, they're quite okay. Most people are okay. They are nice. Most people are nice. Nothing to be afraid of. Now, very important to keep focused all the time because what you want to be doing is they'll be talking about something or other and you might say, oh, well, as a Christian, because they know you're a Christian, remember, so they're not going to be surprised anymore. Well, as a Christian, we would do this, this and this. What do you think about that? Oh, da-da-da-da, and da-da-da. So we started going. Now, after a little bit of conversation, what I usually do after 2 or 3 minutes, I try to find somewhere with the person that I can get him interested in, something about his faith or what he does, just so I can play on that one thing that he may be interested in. So it's all about communication between two people. This will give you great people skills, this job. You'll be so good at judging people. And you've probably heard of things like body language. You know, if someone stands like that, well, you can stand like that. If they stand like that, you stand like that. And somehow, subconsciously, they pick up on that. Very important to keep focused all the time. Your job is to drop the seeds of the gospel. And it's very easy to be carried away by the conversations because it could be any. The guy can sometimes even take over the conversation. If you feel that's happening, politely get in there and go back to the gospel every time because our time is limited and we need to be dropping the seeds of the gospel. Now, if you don't have the opportunity to do it, your challenge will always be, what can I leave that person that is positive? So, very challenging, you know. The guy who just refuses to listen to anything. No, 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 nothing. What can I leave him before I go? Okay, so what's the content? Now, a lot of you have probably read or heard of Philip Jensen's Two Ways to Live. And basically, there's six pointers in there, and those pointers are basically the gospel: creation, sin, judgment, Jesus and his death, the resurrection, and the choice that they have to make, either going their own way or whether they're going God's new way. Giving your own testimonial can be another thing that's very appealing to people on the street. You very much have to feel your way in these conversations. Each conversation is like a bottle of red wine. It's a complete adventure, and everyone is different, and that's what's so challenging about it. So we might run into all the different people we can run into: atheists, agnostic, Buddhist, Jewish, Islamic, Hindu, Christians, in their different walks. You'll meet the ones that say, "Oh, I'm a Christian." So what are you going to ask the person who comes back and says, "Oh, I'm a Christian"? Say, "Oh, do you go to church regularly?" "Oh, well, once or twice a year." So you get to feel where they are in their Christian walk and how you can encourage them where you see they may be lacking, might be in prayer or reading the Bible or whatever it may be. Then there's Catholics. Well, I don't have to tell you about Catholics. You know about Catholics, don't you? But they need evangelising as well, according to Philip. What was this? Romans 10:15. As it's written, "How beautiful are the feet of those who preach the good news." Poetic. That will be all of you today. Now, the only thing... follow-up, of course. Now, as far as follow-up goes, you won't get a lot of follow-up. You'll realise after a while, hopefully you will, and always know, of course, what activities we have here at the church, when the Bible study groups are on, if there's any other activities that you can lead people back to. Some churches even have, they teach English, which I thought was really good. So I get around to a few different churches and they have these different little things, and I thought that was really good, that because there's so many people out there don't speak English, and in the area you say, "Oh, we've gone Sunday afternoons, we've got somebody teaching English from 4 o'clock, why don't you come along?" Get a group of 20 people along. Well, that was a good one. You can invite them for a cup of coffee, invite to read the Bible with them. I find when it comes to asking for details of a person, a telephone number or email address, you're walking the line a bit. You can be talking to them, and then by just asking that personal information, they can sort of go, "Hang on, I've been polite, I've listened to you up to now, but now you're getting a bit too close." So you really have to judge a lot by your intuition, really, and this is why it gives you good people skills. Okay, so now that's basically... I'm just going to come back again to that main line of what we say when we're coming up. "Hello, my name's Jeffrey, this is Jim. We're a couple of Christians from the local church in the area. And what we do this time of day, we walk up to people in the street and ask them about their faith. We're not here to preach, not here to tell you anything. We're just here to know about you as a person. And, of course, what you're going to be doing is listening with love and compassion and understanding of that person. Do you have a faith? Do you have a philosophy on life? Do you have an ideal? Do you have? Are you a deep thinker at all? Do you ever think about life? Do you have a faith?" And they're going to reply, "Well, no, I believe in nothing." Well, you might come in and say, "Well, what do you think happens when you die?" "Oh, nothing, just blackness, blackness, blackness." So, well, you know, there must be something there. We're very intricate people, yeah. So this is where we start the conversation. And as we're in the conversation and it's rolling back and forwards there, we can add our Christian perspective. Now, you'll always know when I'll start talking with someone for maybe 5 minutes or whatever. You can't put a time on it. But when you hear Jeffrey mention the word sin, you know he's in for the attack. I'm on the go. I'll drop the creation, but I'm coming in on the sin. So that whoever's with me, Now, what do you think of this word called sin? Hello, he's at it. He's off and running now, so I'll start talking about sin. So the idea, of course, is for most people to get an understanding of what sin is. Remember, it's a dodgy little word out there, and they don't like to hear it. So sometimes I might say, well, it's a bit old-fashioned, you know, good, bad, you know. But sometimes you have to talk to people like you're talking to children, make it as simple as you possibly can. But it's really not that hard to explain to most people what sin is. They'll have their idea of sin. All you've got to say, but how do you think you'd go comparing your idea of sin to the sin in the Bible? And the sin in the Bible is if we, you know, the guy with the big white beard and the Moses guy, that's it, yeah, that's it. That's the way you've got to talk to people, the Moses guy. Remember those Ten Commandment thingos, you shan't steal or you won't kill and all that, and you won't do this and won't do that. What do you think of that? That's what we call the law of the Bible. Have you ever told a lie? Well, yeah, I have. Have you? Okay, and so with a little bit of talking, you usually get them to see what the sin of the Bible is and what their sin may be. Then we can move on to Jesus, or rather we'd move on to the wrath of God. Don't use that word hell if you can help it. It's another word they don't like to hear about. And when I describe hell to people, if it ever comes to that, I never talk about the fire or the brimstone or anything like that, but I always think a good way to describe hell is a separation from God. You can just say you'll be separated from God. You might be in a world where everybody is a backstabber, a liar and a thief, and you're in there with all those people and you can't trust anyone, you haven't got a friend. Isn't that a terrible existence, a whole world like that, perhaps? So that's just one idea I might talk about. But I certainly never talk of the fires and that sort of thing. Can't do this on first discussions in the street. Okay, so I think I've covered a few things, and you might want to ask me, and one question you will want to ask me is, who are the people we approach in the street, and how do we know who we're going to approach? Well, we never approach people that are walking towards us. And what we're looking for is we're going to walk down the street, you and your partner. We go out in twos, because if you went out on your own and you approach people on your own talking about Jesus, well, they're going to probably think you're a religious nut. But if you go out in twos, it's very, very unusual to find two crazy people walking around together, isn't it? Okay, so who are we going to target? When you walk out, what we're basically looking for is someone that's doing nothing. And how hard is it to do that? When you walk out looking for the person that's doing nothing, you'll find someone's always doing something, especially these days. Out's got the phone on, the fun, or the earphones in the ear, or something in the mouth. Very rarely will you find something. But that's what we're looking for ideally. One person you want. If there's two people there, they're not going to talk to you from their heart. Even if they're best friends with them, you can approach in twos, but better in one. Just one person at a time that way, and make sure there's no people around them that can hear their discussion, or again, they won't reveal themselves. What you want is for them to reveal themselves to you. Now, so the person we're looking for is that person that's just sort of standing there doing nothing. Maybe he's waiting for his wife while she's in shopping or something like that, or might be having a cigarette. You've got till that burns down to drop the gospel on him. So, and people will actually say that you've got that much time, mate. Okay, thanks for that. Well, my wife will be out soon. You've got till then. And you usually find when the person they're waiting for, as soon as they come, you can try and get them into the discussion too. But they're usually off, you know. So our challenge is to drop as much as we can. So we're dropping the seed of the gospel. So many people don't know about Jesus. They've certainly heard about him. Most people believe he did actually exist these days, but that's about all about as far as they do go. And a lot of people don't really know about the gospel, and they're quite surprised to hear it sometimes. So on that note, I shall invite you all to ask me some questions, as many as you want, and you must have so many. What do we do if this or what? What? Okay.
Would you intentionally kind of avoid people who are outwardly kind of Muslim or people with, you know?
Well, the people that are outwardly are usually walking around with burqas or beards and funny hats on. Usually, yeah, you don't really need to. Muslims, I find, are very nice people. They're very happy to talk about their spiritual religion. It's always handy to know a little bit about a few different religions, just a few little bits. So, for example, the Muslim, you'll say your faith, oh, I'm a Muslim. First thing I'll say, well, you know, are you a serious practice? Do you practice seriously? Like, do you do the five prayers a day thing? And like, are you serious, you know? Most of them are, some aren't. The younger ones, they'll say, oh, you know, my father's like that, family's like that. But we have to remember with Muslims and Hindus and Buddhism, you know, these aren't religions like Christianity, because they're cultures. See, we choose to go into our religion, whereas they grow up with it as a culture, and that's the big difference. And so it's very hard to persuade, not that we're necessarily there to persuade, we're there to throw the seeds of the gospel down. He does all the work, remember. We just do the seed dropping. But with Muslims, you know, you mentioned the Quran. Jesus was in the Quran, wasn't he? Yeah, he's a very well-known prophet, very respected prophet in the Quran. They even believe he's coming back from the dead. So there's a few things we've got there. So we can a little bit of conversation. Don't overly do it. You're not going to persuade them in any way, but you never know. And we're all hoping that the words we do say, something will hit somebody. And Now, just one more thing. There's what I call a prayer of faith that I lay on a lot of people when we're talking about leaving them with something positive. That's a real challenge. Someone who believes in nothing, I will generally say to them, if you're really interested in knowing about truth, but really from your heart interested in knowing what the truth of life is, or if there is a truth, or whether God is truth, then I invite you, please go home tonight. Have you ever said a prayer? Just close your eyes, put your hands together like that, and pray to God, and challenge God, and challenge him to reveal himself. And say to him, well, tell him who you are, tell him exactly what you believe. Say, God, I don't believe in you, I don't believe in your son, I don't believe you are the truth. If you are the truth, if you are real, reveal yourself to me. Challenge them with that. And then I ask them if they'll actually make that prayer. And usually they'll tell me, honestly, you know, whether they will or not. And quite a lot of times they will make that prayer. And I believe quite sincerely that if someone really wants to know that truth, he will reveal himself. And he does. And I say, well, he doesn't come in a puff of smoke. And he won't come with a big loud voice from heaven. But he will show himself in circumstance or situation. There was a guy, I do a lot of work outside the cathedral, and I must have laid this prayer on him, and a couple of weeks later I ran into him. I didn't recognize him. I don't readily recognize people I speak to, and I said, you approached me a couple of weeks ago, you remember? Oh, okay. And you told me to say this prayer of faith. Well, guess what I did, and nothing happened. I said, well, what do you think I'm doing here now? This is how it works. This is how God works. He works through circumstances. There's another guy I was talking to last week in Bromley. He was having a cigarette and a coffee outside his work, and he declared himself an atheist. A little bit of talk there for a while, and he said, funnily enough, though, he said, about 2 weeks ago, I had this really vivid dream about heaven. I thought, yeah, and here we are. I wonder what's coming next, and that's how it works.
In terms of leaving them with something, what do you think about actually having one of our prophecy cards or even a gospel?
Absolutely, yes. Yes, yes. Now, in Australia, I usually carry them. They're more readily available, the Two Ways to Live booklet. I carry that. Never carry them in your hands because they can see you coming straight away. Keep them in the back pocket and give it to them and say, before parting, say, look, can I leave you with a little gift? And then I will ask them, you know, will you read it? And people are usually honest enough, they'll say, no, you waste your time. If they're not, I take it back. But if they say, yes, I will, I leave it with them. You know, so ask them if they'll read. They'll usually say they like to have that opportunity to know whether you they want to be honest about it. They'll just say, look, I really won't read it, mate. Come on, then, give it back. But again, yeah, cards with the church on are great. Look, if you've got any questions about anything, look, please, you know, give this, bring it this number. Any questions at all, get back to us. So any sort of tract is good that gives a message from the gospel. It's always good to have the name of the church or your name on the back or some contact thing in case they do have it and have a query and ring you back and there's your follow-up. Yeah. Well, girls can go with... Usually the rule of thumb is that men approach men and women approach women. Now, I don't always go by this. I go more from... But you can have a man and a woman together, man and a woman together, and then you can approach either sex. So that's usually the rule of thumb because, you know, two guys can approach a woman and she can feel a little bit threatened. Although these days it's very unusual. Yes. So, but I find it, you know, in this broad-minded world we live in, it's not too... But again, you read people and you see, you know, if you're causing somebody some kind of distress, it might even be a man, you're causing distress to, you know, be aware of that person's feelings and just be prepared to say, well, hope I haven't bothered you and thank you very much and I hope you're enjoying this lovely Australian sunshine our friend brought over with us today or whatever it may be.
It matters whether you go in twos, boy, girl, or two blokes or two.
No. So like if there are two girls that feel better together or you feel better, you know, two guys or however, it really doesn't matter. But and always approach, remember, one person at a time.
And if you're opening gambit, if the person says, look, I'm really not interested,
yep.
What would you say after that?
You're coming back. You've always come back a second time. So many people, I was with a guy the other day, and as soon as the first guy gets said, no, he was off like that, I'll say, hang on, come here. he was off like a rabbit, he was, you know. So you see, rejection, go, you know, it's like... well, it depends. I think you have to judge with everything. Each thing depends how he's responded as to how you can come back. Usually, I try to use a little bit of comedy. I don't know if I'm funny at all, but you know, I might say, "Look, he knows we're from a church." I say, "Look, I'm not preaching today. I'm having the day off. So what we're doing is actually just asking people about their beliefs. Are you a deep person? Do you talk?" And usually, you'll find 8 out of 10. That guy will come back and he'll start that, and then you follow it through.
So really, if he comes back the second time and says, look, I'm really not interested.
Yeah, that's right, the second time. And you'll know by the tone of voice if the guy or the woman means business, you'll know. But certainly try not to take the first way. If you're taking the first one as a no, you won't get talking to many people, really. Nothing to be afraid of, just... try and rephrase it. So very much you're thinking all the time. While he's replying to some of your questions, you may be thinking, what am I going to ask him next? Where am I going next with the conversation? So it might all sound quite complicated to do, but it's really just developing people's skills and how to. Now, I always play a little role to myself. I pretend I'm an interviewer. A television interviewer asking questions. And why do you do this? What do you think of that? And what foundation do you have that belief on? And what's that like? And usually people will answer you when you ask them questions. And then we can just slide into that little Christian perspective there.
So in a funny sort of way, you are approaching it more like a survey in terms of understanding where they're at and coming from that angle.
Mm. Well, it's not actually a survey angle. It's more of just a compassionate angle of being someone from the church that wants to know about who you are and why you feel like that. And I'm understanding everything you're telling me. I'm trying to understand. I want to hear more about you. I'm genuinely interested in what you think and why you think and so on. And as a Christian, we think this way. What do you think of that? And so on. Yeah.
Now, I remember you saying that first few times you tried this, it wasn't for you, and you needed a lot of coaching. So when we go out today, chances are we're probably going to feel a bit like that. So
no, because we I wasn't caged in the same way. What turned me off was the way this direct preaching effect that so many people use. And you just cannot use this. This is what turned me off. And I didn't need a lot of coaching. What I needed straight away, I realised, was to develop some kind of style where I could talk to people and I could feel relaxed and they could feel relaxed. So over the next year, I was writing down all these little pointers, you know, like don't two people walk up on either side of a person or don't come up from behind and scare them, you know. And, you know, there's... And you'd throw a little joke in now and again, you know, because there's a lot of JWs out there, you know, Jehovah's Witnesses, and they may think you're a Jehovah's Witness, so you can say that. And I usually say, well, look, I had a Jehovah's Witness girlfriend once. I had to get rid of her. She wouldn't stop knocking on my door. And they like a little bit of humour. Well, then I had a Pentecostal girlfriend. I got rid of her. She wouldn't keep her hands off me. But, yeah, a little bit of humour goes a long way with people because I guess, you know, people's idea of a Christian is squeaky, clean, always trying to preach. Show them that you are like them, that you're a real person. So we're talking about today having non-threatening conversations. So if you approach it this way, it will be non-threatening. And you'll have some very, very nice discussions. Once you've had a few, you'll come back and say, wow, I met this person and said this, like, couldn't believe this person thinks like that and, that, and you start to see sides of life you've probably never seen before.
Yeah, well, I was just wondering, if somebody gets chatting and he says, look, I'm going for a beer, can we go with him for a beer?
Why not?
Fantastic.
Why not?
Nice long conversation, that one.
Yep, yep.
Do you get bonus points for that?
You could probably get a lot of good information like that, but that's never happened to me yet, so... But, now, we'll pair up in a moment. Where's the best place? Well, I guess we'll walk from here. Do we have to walk towards sort of Canary Walk? We want people.
Yeah.
Sorry.
One more question.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll get a chance. Okay. If somebody's sitting down,
yeah,
is it considered like intimidating to go up and not two people stand there?
Well, think of psychology for a moment. If someone's sitting down, it's always best to sit down with them rather than be towering over them. I prefer always to be standing, but again, I'll judge it. But it's a psychology thing, isn't it? You know, if they're on the grass, get down on the grass. If they're on one knee, you get on one knee. I don't like doing, but really, it works better that way. It's a better communicative thing if we do that sort of thing. So yeah, sitting down. But quite often, if someone's sitting down, I'll sort of, you know, just talk to them and just feel it out. And if it's going all right, because I like to stay on my feet all the time. I have trouble getting up. Right. I always like to take the minister out first. No, I do, actually. I usually do that because I think a lot of ministers like to see, well, is he preaching the same stuff as us? You know, a lot of churches worry about this, you know, it's like... And so it's good to it's good to see, yeah. And then we're going to rely on you, Marcus, to carry on the good work. You'll have all the expert teaching there, and.
But as you say, we can rotate around a bit.
Well, hopefully, yeah. But see, in an hour, we usually only do maybe three conversations in an hour, you know. So. Sometimes more, sometimes less. I mean, last week, to this ministry is so good. We went out with, there were 17 of us went out. We had like, in 1 hour, we had between us about 30, 32 one-to-one conversations, which is pretty good outreach when you think about it. That's the training day. So imagine if you could get people from the church going out, even, you know, 8 people, 10 people a week, how many conversations, how much you can be delivering to those people.
Have you tried doing it in hospitals?
No, but I'm sure there's lots of like anything door to door or this is more this is apart from any sort of hospitals or door knocking. This really you'll be so pleased to learn this skill because you know it's more beneficial than having you know a little census card there that you're filling in, you know, just the challenge of going up and talking to people, looking in their eyes and speaking to their heart. Now, is anybody scared? That's all left you now, hasn't it? Now, remember, very important, get across that Christian bit where you're from straight away, because it's that 1 second when you walk up to somebody. You imagine you're sitting there and I walk across to you and I walk up to you and you're looking at me. And imagine if I just stall for just 2 seconds. Every second counts as you're in front of that person. So you say, hello, how are you today? My name's Jeffrey and this is John. We're a couple of Christians from the local church here, and we're walking up to people today asking if they would share their ideals on life or their philosophies or their faith. Do you have a faith?
Oh yes, I do. Yeah. So what happened if they answer you that they are Christian and then you leave them alone?
No. There's only one word I want to hear from a Christian. Yeah. So I will question them. So I will find out straight away where they are in their Christian walk, right? So you never just take, yeah, I'm a Christian. I would ask them first of all, you know, how often they go to church and where their church is, and you'll soon get a good idea. But the most important question you can ask any Christian is, what does Jesus Christ mean to you personally? And there's only one answer you want to hear back, isn't it? He's my Saviour. On that, I'll leave them alone. But anything less than that, I won't. But that's it. And anyone who has the cross written in their heart will reply this way.
It's quite,
yeah, I will. Okay. Dear Heavenly Father, thank you for this day. Thank you for the opportunity for us all to go out onto the street and serve you as labourers of love. We will go out. We pray, Father, that you will hold us in your right hand, that we will feel no fear, that you will look over us. We pray, Father, that you will lead us to the people that you would have us talk to, and that you would give us the words that you would have us say. And we will fully trust in the words that we speak to these people. We pray that these words will enter their hearts and they will reflect on these words, and that these words will bring them closer to your truth and the truth of Jesus Christ. And we pray this in the name of our Lord. Amen.